I'd like to ask you if you guys have figured out who actually made the decision to change the RFS. If you feel that this decision was made at EPA, at OMB, at a higher level in the White House. So in other words, when you're mounting this campaign against the change, who do you actually need to address?
Jerry, I'm not sure that it really matters because ultimately the administration is the one that's responsible as a whole for promulgating the decision. But look, I think our assessment is that there were folks at the White House that grew concerned over the course of the summer that the rising price of RINs were driving gasoline prices. That's why we have spent so much time trying to show empirically why there is no correlation between RINs and gas prices, and why we continue to make the point that, you know, frankly, you can have a growing biofuels market or you can have low-priced RINs. You can't have both. But I think that there were folks at the White House in particular, but also some at EPA, that didn't understand that, fundamentally misunderstand the role of RINs in terms of driving technology and driving the marketplace to accomplish the goals the Energy Security Act was intended to accomplish.
I'll add one more thing. You know, this is, some of this is not inside baseball. This is Brooke Coleman, Vance Ethanol Council. There's now evidence in the docket, you know, that the administration put on there themselves that has emails going back and forth in the interagency review process during which the White House is pushing down on the program. So our concern is obviously that there's performance anxiety in the administration with regard to the RFS. The RFS was just pushing the oil companies out of their comfort zone with regard to renewable fuel blending, and we need to change that.
The first one was Bob Dineen, right?
Yes, I'm sorry, Jerry.
Sorry.
Jasmine?
Again, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Tiffany Stecker from Climate Wire.
I call. Just to clarify, are you focusing your conference today on increasing the REOs for cellulosic or for overall biofuel or for the corn portion? And how much flexibility does EPA have in increasing the cellulosic RVO given the circuit court decision from last year?
Brooke, you want to take a first whack at this?
Yeah, sure. I think Brian also alluded to it when he alluded to D6 RIN prices. Why don't I take a 30-second crack at it?
I can try something too, Brooke.
Okay. So, Brian, why don't you go first, and I'll go after you.
You can bat clean up. This is Brian Foody from Iogen. Tiffany, we in the cellulosic industry are interested in both the broader renewable fuel market as well as in the cellulosic numbers themselves. So first, with respect to the broader fuel market, the overall mandate level for renewable fuels effectively turns into a signal for the amount of E85 or new fuels going into the market. We're very interested that EPA create headspace in the renewable fuels number up and over the E10 blend amount so that there will be an incentive for E85. The growth of cellulosics is expected to be very large, and we need to see a vision for the growth in the overall renewable fuels market to make that work. With respect to the cellulosic biofuel RVO, EPA, obviously, given the litigation, has a limited amount of flexibility with respect to the numbers they're going to have to set. They have to make an assessment of the information they've collected and set the numbers that. That said, we believe that EPA will have flexibility or should create flexibility in its offerings to deal with both undershoots and overshoots. We are concerned that given the possibility now that there may be significant overshoots in cellulosic biofuel production, that the opportunities for having a robust D3 RIN market will be undermined. And we're very much encouraging EPA to take a look at how they can balance over multiple years the overall mandate for cellulosic biofuels with the supply that's available.
Yeah, Tiffany, this is Brooke. The only thing, I'll just add a couple quick things. The first is that the answer to your question is, as Brian said, is all of the above. They're all these different RIN pools are all wound together, and we're concerned, particularly that the White House views them as siloed and not interrelated. And so the D6 RIN price, which is often regarded to be the corn ethanol RIN, is breaking the market open for ethanol and really for advanced ethanol, because the RFS flatlines at 15 billion gallons for corn ethanol. The advanced biofuel RIN, that pool is also being dialed back, and the problem with that is most of the cellulosic biofuel industry, when they talk to investors and project financiers, they're talking, when they look at the premium for their fuel, they look to the advanced RIN and not yet the cellulosic biofuel RIN, because the cellulosic biofuel RIN is not, in essence, pressurized, because we're just reaching commercial production. So a RIN market doesn't really spark until we reach commercial production. And so as a result, if we deflate advanced RIN prices by dialing back the advanced pool, then we're in essence devaluing cellulosic biofuels with every other advanced biofuel in the process. And then the last piece is we are working with EPA on coming up with a more nuanced approach to the cellulosic biofuel RIN.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Amanda Sterka from Greenwire.
Thanks for taking my question. Chris, this is for you. I believe you said for Abengoa has decided to place a hold on sort of looking at future investments in the United States until you see what the final rule is. I mean, if the rule is similar or the same to what EPA has proposed, I mean, is it safe to say there will be no more Abengoa cellulosic ethanol plants in the United States? Or is that going too far?
Well, thanks for the question. I don't know that I'd make it quite that absolute. Certainly what we need to do is see what the final rule is, but we also need to see, to confirm in our own mind, what impact that has on the markets. Our anticipation is that if the rule is maintained, substantially similar to where it is today, that it will have a dramatic impact on the markets, that it will decrease investment in second-generation biofuels from virtually all sources in the U.S. And so, we evaluate and revise our plans on a daily basis, but at this point, we certainly have decided not to move forward with any future investments until we have a little bit more information.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Ellen Ferguson from Congressional Quarterly.
Hi, and thank you for having the call. I have two questions. One, when would you expect EPA to issue a final 2014 RFS? And then two, if EPA does not significantly revise its proposal, are you prepared, either as an industry or as individual companies, to take EPA to court?
Alan, this is Bob Dineen. I think EPA is going to be under a lot of pressure to promulgate a final rule as quickly as possible. Now, they are going to get tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of comments. They've got an obligation to review all of those, to respond to the various arguments that are being made, so it's not going to be weeks, it will be months, but I think everybody is looking for some certainty. Certainly the biofuels industry needs certainty as much as the refiners do. I hope that they issue this as soon as they change it to reflect the statutory requirements. In terms of litigation, look, that puts the cart a bit before the horse, obviously, because we'll want to evaluate what they do in a final rule. I do expect there to be changes to the final rule. I do expect there to be significant changes to the final rule. And we hope that they restore the integrity of the RIN markets so that the market for biofuels is a growing one. As they have proposed it, the market for biofuels, as Brooke has noted, is a shrinking one. They've got to continue to drive this market. And I've said before, I don't believe that the administration has lost its commitment to biofuels, lost its commitment to greenhouse gas reductions, lost its commitment to rural economic benefits or fuel diversity. And so I remain confident that changes to this rule will occur that will keep us out of court. I am certainly hopeful that that is the case.
This is Brooke Coleman, and I'll just jump in and make one more point, and that is, and you didn't ask this question, but it's a first cousin of the question, and that is, who loses if we get stuck in court? And this is something that the administration should be focused on. If we go into court on this proposal, the result will be that we're going to perpetuate the uncertainty in the marketplace for the duration of the lawsuit. The projects that are looking to go outside of the country will be more inclined to go outside of the country. And the small players that are just breaking through and creating a value proposition that have burn rates that cannot go on for years and years will be in a very difficult position with regard to moving forward. Again, these are the types of companies that the president is trying to grow in this country, not export. And so it's very important that we get this proposal turned around and not end up in court on the current proposal, because the presumption will be that the current proposal is the rule of law at the time. And so that's something that needs to be known going forward.
Thank you.
Again, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. You do have a follow-up question from the line of Amanda Taterka from Greenwire.
This is either for Bob or Brooke. Wondering about the oil industry lawsuit over the 2013 RFS targets. Do you see anything in that influencing what EPA ultimately decides to do in 2014, or any decision in that lawsuit that could lead to challenges of the 2014 targets?
Amanda, this is Bob. That's a very good question, because a lot of the same issues that are being brought to bear in the 2013 RVO litigation that the API brought would be similar to those teed up in the 2014 RVO, which sort of puts EPA at odds with itself. We are told that the agency intends to defend its 2013 rule vigorously, and I think they're going to have to figure out themselves how they rationalize these two approaches, because they're pretty different.
Thanks.
You have another follow-up from the line of Gary Hagstrom from the Hagstrom Court.
I was wondering if you could comment on how important do you think the various lobbying efforts against the RFS were? You talked about the issue of the RINs, but what about, you know, the oil industry, AAA, the meat industry? Do you think that the administration listened a lot to them, or was this more of an internal decision based on their own thinking?
Brooke, do you want to take this one first, and I'll follow up?
Sure. You know, if you look, we've been fighting the oil industry for the better part of a decade, going back to before RFS-1, back when ethanol was proposed to replace the gasoline additive MTBE. And during the course of at least 10 years, they have been very effective at finding an argument that they think will be politically effective and putting it in the right place. The oil industry has no shortage of resources, and so if you look at the time period around late spring, summer, early fall, when RIN prices were increasing and the RFS was putting the oil industry in a tough position with regard to trying to avoid their obligation under the RFS, they were all over the place, and they were very active. And so our guess is, and this is speculation, that but it's not a hard conclusion to reach, is that the oil companies focused on trying to frame higher RIN prices as a threat with regard to gas prices, and they convinced people that they were a threat. And it's a little frustrating because we spent a lot of time trying to educate the White House and the administration on what's actually going on in the RIN programs. But when the oil industry complains, there is a temptation to listen a little closer. So again, we're sort of working against misinformation campaigns as part of every day, and they do have an effect on decision making. And we expect the policymakers to be able to see through the fog on some of these arguments a little more effectively than we have so far on the RFS.
Jerry, the only thing I would add to Brooke's comment is he tied it to the last 10 years because he's a young man. I've been doing this for 27 years, so I've seen the oil companies fighting the expansion of the biofuels market throughout that entire time. What EPA will have to do, as Amanda's previous question sort of got to, is to promulgate a final rule that will withstand judicial scrutiny. And so, you know, I do not think that the politics ultimately prevails. They need to have good, strong, defensible technical arguments. So, hope that helps.
Yes. Thank you. I'm out here in San Diego at the biodiesel convention.
Tell Joe Job I said hello.
Okay, I will. Where he said he considered the justification in the rulemaking to be very sloppy, and also said that the item in the Federal Register contained some factual errors from the standpoint of his industry. Do you have any comments on how the rulemaking was conducted?
I'm not sure that I would share Joe's cynicism that way. You know, frankly, I give EPA credit for the public process that they have convened so far. I looked at the bureaucrats that sat through more than 12 hours of public testimony in Arlington in early December, and I was proud of the way the agency you know, listen to everybody's comments, let everybody have their say. Look, they are doing, I think, as good a job as they can possibly do. They're trying to sort through some pretty technical issues with respect to the interplay of RINs and the marketplace. That's why we are taking the comment period so seriously, and we'll have, very detailed comments on each of these issues.
And there are no further audio questions at this time.
Well, Jasmine, then, thank you very much. And again, thank each of you for being on the call. And thank you as well to Chris and Brian, Delaine and Brooke. If you have any questions of any of us, I know that we'll be happy to respond. Thank you very much, folks.